1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. Joe Mahon. Joe, you've been on the programme before, unfortunately, about your missing son, Willie, and his fiancée, Anna. You contacted us again today, Joe. Has there been developments?
No, there's a new programme on Friday. There's a rewind of a crime call going out on Monday to remind people, freshen up people's minds. About the case, what's going on this last almost 4 years now.
And is it still a missing persons case?
No, it's upgraded to double murder.
Oh, God. And when you heard that, what was your reaction, Joe?
Well, my reaction was, it devastated. My whole family was devastated because we nearly knew, Joe, from day one, not a second day after my son was murdered and his girlfriend. But the guards doing the job, they said they had to class as a missing person for so long, but intelligence and whatever else got it, they had to upgrade it to double murder.
And also, Willie's fiance, Anna Varslavan, she was pregnant at the time. They went missing in April 2015, 4 years ago next month.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. She was pregnant, yeah.
And has there been any sightings or contact or rumours or about what happened?
There's strong rumours of what happened, and nothing concrete, but all strong rumours that what happened. William and Anna were murdered, and the people behind it. And
Don't mention anyone.
I know. I won't do that.
Don't say any names under any circumstances, but do you know who killed your son and his partner?
Yes, we do, yes.
No, you do?
Yes, we do, yeah.
And have you seen them recently?
I haven't seen any part of these in the last 2 or 3 years. I've seen them regular before that, intimidate me and my family.
Are they still in Ireland?
Yes. One of the main suspects is locked up at the minute, yes.
Okay. So, was there a number of people involved, do you believe, in the killing of the two?
There's a large number of people involved, yeah.
Okay. Mm. The last time you contacted us, which I think was in 2016, you were basically begging for information about their whereabouts.
Yeah, that's correct.
I presume you're still, that still would be your plea, that at least give you the
dignity
of having a funeral.
Yeah, that's the way we this is what the rewind of crime call is. We can't change what happened, but all we want is for me and my family. I'm 64 years of age. My missus is not far behind me either. Before I leave this earth, I'd like to put my son in a coffin where he should be, in a consecrated ground, in a graveyard with his brother. That's what I'd want, and I plead with people out there that might be involved, but there, on the day it happened, I'm asking with them, look at their own kids and think about it. That could be their kids next. I'm asking those people if they can see it in their heart and look up at the sky at God looking down at them and saying, clear their conscience and make the right phone call to the right people. And they don't have to identify themselves to do this. Just say the right things. That's what I'm asking for, those people. Will they help me to bury my son with his brother? That's what I want. And I can get a crystal berry as well, a whole.
You mentioned another son. What happened to him, Joe?
I lost a son in Serie A to bacterial meningitis.
And what age was he?
Bob was 30, yeah.
30 and he died from meningitis?
Yeah, died in hospital.
Oh, God rest him.
Tal Hospital, yes. And he's gone now 11 years this March.
And what do you reckon Willie got involved with?
William was a plumber by trade, Joe. Yeah. And he was a good plumber by trade, but when things went slack and the drugs, came heavy, where I live in Killinarden since 1981. Yeah. And he moved out to Balbriggan to get away from that for a bit. He got in with a local businessman there that treated him very fair. But the sad part of it was he got involved in pool and darts in a pub in Balbriggan, and this is how we got in with these people for a period of time. They used my son as a ghillie, and you know, because they had the money, and well, you know how I don't want to say it over the phone, how they were getting their money, but they used my son for as a ghillie, doing things for them and whatever. But it copped onto himself after so long, and he broke away from them. Mm-hmm. But the sad part, Joe, he lived out there, and he knew so much the time he was involved with them, if you understand me meaning. As I said before, Joe, and I'm making it clear here, my son wasn't the perfect apple on the tree at the time.
Okay.
But then he copped himself on, and he broke away from this. And the day in question that he went missing, he actually went into shops in Balbriggan and bought the up-to-date the Philly's toolbox again to start back work, because I had a job arranged for him within that week to go back plumbing, and he was getting the bits and pieces that were missing from his toolbox, and that's the carrier bag you had. Yeah. Some of the tools were in that bag when he went missing. Yeah.
And Joe, do you reckon he knows, he knew who killed him?
Oh, he knew
the people?
Yes, he did.
And then it's horrific. Nobody can justify the killing of another person. But his partner, why was she killed?
Because she was with him there.
She happened to be with him?
Yeah, with him, yeah.
And where is Anna originally from?
I'm nearly sure it's Latvia. I can't pronounce the word right now.
Yeah, okay. And has her family been in touch?
Well, I lost her mother a couple of years previous to going missing. And her father died when she was very young. Her natural father died when she was very young. Where she came from. Yeah.
So she wouldn't have...
She was a black orphan. That means her mother and father were dead.
And were you involved? You said you filmed something for a crime call. Are you involved in that for next Monday?
I give a little bit. A little bit. My wife and my two daughters.
And how is your wife?
My wife is like any woman looking for a child, and heartbroken. And you will see it yourself on crime call. The annoying of what she has. She's a broken woman, the same as myself. And that's all I can tell you. Like any mother or child, how they love their children. That's the way it is, you know.
And have yourself and Helen got other children, Joe?
We had 7 kids overall. We had 3 boys and 4 girls. Yeah. I have twin girls and Shirley and things, you know.
And you've lost 2 of your boys at this stage.
Yeah, I lost 2 of my boys. One, and the other young lad I have left is a special needs young lad.
And your plea today again is anybody who knows where their remains might be to try and give yourself and Helen and the family some relief from the pain.
Yeah.
It won't end the pain. No,
they'll never end the pain. We'll take that to wherever we go when our time is up. All I'm asking is people, as I said earlier on, is I'm pleading with those people that were there but not involved and actually in the murder.
Okay.
Look at your own kids if you're married and think that could be my child as well. I'm asking those people, please, you don't have to say that, just give us back the bodies if you know where they are.
Okay.
Leave a mark or something and make a phone call, please.
Okay, Joe Mahon, thanks indeed for contacting us. Joe, are you gone? I just wanted to ask you...
The last time
you were on, did I hear something subsequently that one of your family graves was desecrated?
Yeah, Michael Bobby's grave was done.
Just the boy who died from meningitis.
Yeah, in Series 16. Yes. They dug it up. They were over 5 foot down, Joe. They were 5 hours digging the grave.
God.
Yeah, you could nearly see. Actually, the young lad that's missing, William, the time he buried his brother, we had that little transistor radio, if you understand.
Yeah.
You can actually see that on top of that close to the coffin. That was left down to the coffin. Yeah, that's how close they were to the coffin.
Okay, stay with us, because we've been contacted by 2 other people. Now, it's about their sons as well, but it's different contexts. Anne, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Thankfully, it's not as tragic as Joe and Helen's story, but what is the situation with your son, Anne, who's an adult as well in his 20s?
Yeah. He was diagnosed with narcolepsy and cataplexy, which is a sleep disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And he was put on stimulants, and it kind of went from there. Life just changed completely for him. And it was like he just, his brain, like, it almost came overstimulated. And he went sleeping, from sleeping 16 hours a day to 20-minute naps.
Right.
Just, you know, it was just, life was hell for him. He was in college. He ended up having to drop out, and all his courses, everything seemed to have gone against him.
Right.
He had a lot of side effects from the medication, but he was waiting to get on a new medication.
Okay. And where is he now, Anne?
He actually, on the 21st of January 2018, he went to the UK.
Okay.
And we're heartbroken.
Take your time, because you're contacting us because you want to try and get help. And I know it's over a week since you contacted us, but take your time. And if you're sitting down, grab your breath, because it's important that you tell your story. We'll call him John. Where is John now, your son?
John is actually ended up in the UK,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And he had just sent a few text messages to his brother saying things were going okay, but then all of a sudden he stopped replying.
Right.
So I became extremely worried, so I went off to go looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of knew the area he was around. That was all we had, but we didn't know exactly where. So when I travelled over, 6 weeks later, my son here at home got a call from his brother to say that he wanted money to be transferred into his account because everything he had been robbed.
Okay.
And that he was homeless.
And you managed to find him?
I managed to find him. So we got him to a doctor. Mm-hmm. And it ended up from there, they ended up telling me that they would get somebody because he was on medication. So all his medication, his car, every single thing, item that he owned was taken.
Yeah.
So he ended up with absolutely nothing. He had no money. He had nothing. So we ended up taking him to the medical center.
Yeah.
Where this doctor we spoke to, she had said that somebody would assist us within a few days to bring him home, to bring him back to Ireland.
Yeah.
But that has never happened. He ended up... that night they took him, and I haven't seen my son since.
And do you believe he's in a hospital?
He is in hospital, yes.
And why won't they tell you where he is?
Because he has told them that he doesn't want any information shared.
And he's an adult, and they're right.
He's an adult. So he was, like, he suffered, because of keeping off all of his medication together, suffered huge, huge withdrawal symptoms.
But are you down as his next of kin in that hospital?
Well, that is what the point I am trying to make. Mm-hmm. They are just not acknowledging anything.
So you want to ask other people, have you any rights?
Have I rights? Because I have contacted this solicitor in the UK, and he said that we should be recognised as nearest relative under the Mental Health Act 1983, because John is not ordinarily a resident in the UK.
Yeah.
So we should be entitled to information.
And Anne, by the way, how did you locate him?
I just got it into my head a week beforehand that my son was going to die, and that he was going to die of the cold and hunger and everything else. And I just had visions that he was homeless, even though I didn't know about it at the time. And I just before I left the house here, I googled homeless shelters, and three came up. So when I actually got to the city that morning, when he had phoned my younger son, I just checked my phone for the three homeless shelters when he had said he was in a homeless shelter, that he was homeless.
And that's how you went to each one, did you?
That's what I had planned doing.
Okay.
So when I went into the nearest store, they didn't know where it was. So I went straight to the police station because I said they would have to know.
Yeah.
And when I walked in, there was my son just standing inside the window.
My God.
He was actually just charging his phone.
And what was your reaction when you saw him?
Well,
because he has very, very bad, severe cataplexy, which is muscles.
Yeah.
Emotions bring on these seizures, like if they collapse.
Right.
And he literally couldn't even speak. And he kept collapsing and he banged his head several times, but he couldn't even speak.
And did he recognise you, Anne?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. But,
and that's when you brought him to hospital.
Yeah.
But effectively, yeah, unfortunately, that's when you lost him as well, because he went into the system.
Yeah. But, like, it's the fact that we're getting no information. We don't know if he's improving. We know absolutely nothing about him.
And how have you tried to communicate with the hospital that he's in? Have you emailed? Have you written in the post?
I'm constantly phoning them. I'm sending emails. I have got my local solicitor, who has sent several letters.
Okay. And have you had any replies?
Just one reply, one to the solicitor,
saying he does not wish to talk to his family.
At this time. They keep saying that they feel he's capable of making his own decisions.
Okay.
But he's still in the hospital over a year, so, like, if he's capable of making his own decision, how is he still in the hospital?
And how long is it since you've seen him, Anne?
I have not seen him. I just got a glimpse of him 6 months ago.
What do you mean? You went to the hospital, did you?
I went to the hospital and just waited to see what I see him coming out or passing or...
And how did you see him?
Just he was actually coming back from a walk with a group.
And did you shout over to him or...? No, it's too distressing. It's too distressing, Anne. I know that. I did.
I just went to him and I hugged him, but he just got such a shock.
Yeah.
And he was literally speechless and I could see he was about to collapse again. So I just had to let him go again.
Okay, and take your time, because we want to see, does anyone else know, is there any way out of this situation? And I'm going to take a quick break. Have you someone there with you in the house at the moment?
No.
Okay. Well, you can put down the phone for a few minutes. You can go in and sit down, have a cup of tea if you want. Just give yourself a little break. Take a few. I know you are very anxious to tell the story. A few long, deep breaths.
It's just our right to see our son or to get information on him. Like, they have told me that if he's discharged, that they do not have to tell me where he is.
Oh, that was my next question, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Anne, just give yourself a little soothing and a little rest for a minute, and we'll talk to you after this break. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. And I'm talking to Anne. We began by talking to Joe Mann, who now believes his son is dead, and the Gardaí have upgraded the investigation to a double murder because he's been missing with his partner. Indeed, she was pregnant, Anna was pregnant. And Joe is simply asking for his remains back. And there's no comparing upset and grief. But in one sense, you know where we're calling him John. You know where John is.
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
Are you afraid that he will leave that hospital and you will not know?
Yes, that's my main worry.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, like, what are our rights?
Yeah, and you're based in Ireland. The hospital is in England. Have you any relations that live or near that place?
Absolutely nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Okay.
No.
And do you know if that a lot of hospitals would have visiting groups or visiting committees or priests or chaplains or Vincent de Paul or various Samaritans or whatever that would go in?
What I had been told was that they're entitled to an advocate. But when I asked about getting an advocate, they were saying, no, well, we have our own in the hospital, and that was it.
Yeah, and there's no way. Was there any indication that if you contacted the advocate, you might be able to get some?
Yeah, they told me no, that I couldn't do it.
Couldn't. Okay.
No.
God, it's very strict, isn't it?
It is so, so sad, because he is just, he was the most beautiful, beautiful, loving son.
And he will be again, Anne. He's still with you. I know he's going through great difficulties, but he's still with you. He is your boy. Stay with us for a second. I want to bring Paul in. 51551. And stay there. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for making the call. Now, where is your son? Was in hospital?
He was, yeah. Owen was admitted to hospital last year. He'd gone to college, and not like unlike lots of kids who go to college, got involved in illicit drugs and drinking, having the crack, and obviously he went on a bad trip, ended up with severely diluted psychosis, was admitted to hospital in the southeast. He was in there for about 6 weeks. He was very psychotic, but he was starting to make progress.
Okay.
He was sectioned under the Mental Health Act as well, and I really empathise with Anne's situation, actually, big time. And that was grand. We were very hopeful. And I went in, we went in one weekend and we found our son stoned. So he'd gone into a facility for drug-induced psychosis and he ended up starting to get better, and then suddenly somebody managed to get marijuana or cannabis into the facility and he smoked it and he was back to square one.
And did you ask him where he got it?
Well, at that point, we got to the bottom of how the drugs got into the facility via another individual. Owen was smoking rolly cigarettes, I don't honestly believe that Owen had the dexterity, or my son had the dexterity to roll the joints. But they were all rolling cigarettes, and Owen managed to get some cannabis in one of his cigarettes, and he was back to square one. The Gardaí investigated the incident in the area, but they didn't take a huge amount of action, and I thought it was very bizarre. The other individual was obviously quite sick with a mental health issue themselves, and that individual was removed from the facility as a consequence of bringing drugs into the facility.
And that person, I presume, is another patient?
Another patient, yes, Joe. So we were back to square one. Owen ended up then on a secure part of a locked ward, really. He was secluded as well. Owen has got high functioning autism. I think it's important to mention that. That's where it's at. He ended up then getting out of hospital, but he's still quite deluded. He's still quite unwell. The community facilities aren't brilliant. So I think the problem we have in Ireland, we have a huge increase in the number of people who've been assessed to have autism, but these young people will become adults. Yeah? I think we do very well with regard to the schooling system, and up to 18 we're doing great. Yeah?
Yeah.
But it's after that in the mental health services, we're not doing brilliant. And my son was actually in the facility in Kilkenny, which the Mental Health Act slated, and the Mental Health Commission slated very publicly.
Okay,
and
I don't want to go into an individual facility that I haven't been told about beforehand, but do you blame cannabis on his psychosis?
Absolutely, totally, yeah.
And what was happening? He was getting, I know cannabis, the strength is getting higher and higher, stronger and stronger, apparently.
Yeah, well, I work in a healthcare background myself, and I mean, there is some evidence to suggest that the strength is, the active agent is much stronger than it might have been, years ago. Psychotic episodes, apparently, there's some research to suggest that, one in every 10 smokes can be a result in a psychotic episode. Now, whether an individual, ends up with a mental illness as a consequence of that or not, it would be wrong of me to say.
Okay.
But I think the issue, clearly there's an issue around the particular substance. Now, there are positive stories as well around the substance, and, the talks about legalising it, for, pain relief and other issues.
Decriminalising,
and regulating it for those issues.
But also, in common with Anne's son, your son is in his 20s, is he? What age is he?
Yeah, he's in his 20s. He's in his early 20s.
So you've no rights as such?
Explain.
Maybe it's different here than it is to the experience that Anne is going through.
I have to be fair to the mental health professionals involved. They worked very closely with myself and Owen's mum, and they were. But Owen didn't make the decision that he didn't want his parents involved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, had he done that, obviously we would probably be in a very different situation, in a very trying situation, and it would have been his right to do it. I've actually just been looking online with regard to the mental health. I worked in the UK within these kind of hospitals myself many years ago, but I just looked at, you know, just as you were talking, and it would appear quite clear that Anne has very few rights at all. And I just find that weird.
Would she have more rights in Ireland if her son was in an Irish hospital? An Irish mental location. Do you know?
All I can say is that on a personal experience, you know, in fairness to the professionals that we worked with, they worked very closely with the family. But it's not the same situation, Joe, because our son didn't choose to exclude us from his care. Another question, though, that I'm curious about in both cases, and that's this issue of capacity to consent. And the idea that if someone is extremely mentally unwell, yeah, how can they have the capacity to consent to treatment?
Yeah, and I think that was one of Anne made that point in another way. She said, "They're telling me he has the ability to tell them not to contact or let any of his family know where he is."
But they don't feel he's safe enough not to be in a mental hospital.
Exactly. That was
that's incongruent. I mean, surely that's incongruent, isn't it?
Yeah, sounds incongruent.
Yeah, it doesn't kind of make sense. But so we're just hopeful. Owen, you know, needs community input. So I think my argument here is, you know, we need to look at these things. If people are really mentally unwell, yes, they need to be in a place of safety. But there's also evidence to suggest that what helps people get mentally well, and I've had a mental health condition myself, quite a severe mental health condition, and I've survived it, and I'm working quite well, and everything is good. But that didn't happen without a network of support, Joe.
Yeah.
The network of community support, and if you read about this, you know, or talk to people who become well again mentally, or in recovery, one of the key elements to that is your family, your friends, those people that can help you crawl, walk, and become a part of society again. And it's frustrating to think. Okay. That, I mean, I think it's the law gone mad. You know.
And
what age
was your boy when you first noticed the psychosis?
I was just 20.
Okay.
You know, he was at third level college, you know, and
okay, and that's, you know, that's when he started getting involved with the drugs or whatever.
That's when he started getting involved with drugs and all of that kind of thing. And you know, now one is hopeful that, you know, with the right support, that he make the right recovery. But the other challenge that we have for these young lads is the fact that, you know, if they've got other issues, like say autism, for example. You know, the mental health services actually admitted that they were struggling to care for somebody who presented with a mental illness and illness like autism.
And Paul,
they didn't have the expertise.
And Paul, listening to Anne there, I know you're in a difficult situation as well, but listening to Anne and putting on your hat when you worked in one of these hospitals, I presume, and by the way, you mentioned yourself as well, I presume you've seen many people get well again.
Absolutely, Joe. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Lots and lots of people get well, you know, with the right treatment and, you know, the right approach. And it's not all about drugs either. It's about an eclectic approach. But I'm going to make one further point just very quickly, Joe. Yeah. And this is just, when I look at Ireland and I look at the UK and we've got Brexit and all of that nonsense, but I think culturally, you know, we've got a much stronger community network, family, the village versus the child ethos in our country. Then maybe you would get in the UK. And that's not me criticising one or the other. But I do think that if we can get people up and well, that our society does help. I think communities work very well in our country.
I know that. That's one great strength here, is the strength of community. Okay, Paul, thanks again. And thanks again, and I hope you can draw some comfort from what Paul is saying. He's going through, in many ways, what you're going through. He has gone through other episodes before, and he has come through, and then through his work life, he sees a lot of hope as well. Mm-hmm. So, Anne, thanks for contacting us.
What I just wanted to say, like, it was a psychotic episode also, what they said to me when he was admitted. But, like, 3 weeks after being admitted, they had told me that they felt he was still capable of making his own decisions, but now, a year on, he's still there. Why is he still there?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Anne. Yeah. Anne, thanks indeed. And look after yourself, Anne, and your family. I know you're very much concerned about your family, and that's the reason you contacted us. Anne, yeah. Paul and Joe Mahon, who's there at the start. Again, condolences, Joe, to yourself and Helen. 51551.